Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You're listening to the Talking OTC Commodities podcast series, brought to you by the Global Commodities team at EEX Group.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 8 of Talking OTC Commodities, brought to you by EEX Group. I'm Michael Mervyn-Jones, and in this episode, we're going to examine the outlook for PPAs and long-term hedging in a post-COVID world. Now, as usual, I'm joined by a fantastic panel of experts, including Viviana Ciancibello, Senior Business Developer at EEX.
Hello.
Jorge Arenales, VP of Energy Management at Sonadix, the global solar independent power producer.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And last, but by no means least, Jay Rostulka, Head of Structured Trading for Power at the leading energy company and one of the largest power generators in the world, Uniper.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for having me join the panel.
A big welcome to you all, and thanks for your time. I think we'd all agree that 2020 has really turned out to be a year like no other, and one that we certainly didn't expect. But before we assess the impact of COVID, perhaps it would be good to take a few steps back and discuss the rise in PPAs and long-term hedging over the past few years. Jorge, I'd like to bring you in here. You're responsible for PPA origination at Sonadix, so perhaps you can help us here. Can you give us a potted history of PPAs? What actually is a PPA, and why have they become so important?
Well, thank you, Michael. Well, basically, PPAs are a vital instrument for bankability of renewable projects, mainly during the times when government subsidies are fading out. As you know, PPAs play a really important role for companies like Sonadix or other independent power producers in order to contract our revenue. PPAs are power purchase agreements that are negotiated between two counterparties, and they allow to specify every single clause that is required in the market. So in our side, from the seller's point of view, we are able to sell our electricity to a counterparty at a fixed price or a variable price, but we get some contracted revenues in the market, and the off-taker takes the electricity for us in the long term. So that helps us out to analyze our projects better and to make the projects bankable.
Thanks, Jorge. Perhaps you could tell the listeners a little bit more as to why PPAs have become so important in recent years.
Well, from my perspective, it's basically because government subsidies are fading out. As you know, there was a lot of regulatory schemes across Europe and other countries outside Europe. And obviously, PPAs or bilateral contracts were necessary in order to make your projects viable because you had all their alternatives. But right now, with this situation of a more merchant exposure in the market, PPAs are an important and a vital role here because they allow us to contract our energy in the long term. So this is the reason why in the last 5 years or something like that, PPAs are playing this vital role. It's just because of that, because the way sellers were used to sell the electricity into the market via subsidies or government renewable auctions or things like that, right now are fading out, and therefore we need other instruments to contract our revenues and to make our revenues more stable.
That's great. Thanks, Jorge. Viviana, same question to you, I guess, but from the long-term hedging perspective. What's the relationship between PPAs and long-term hedging? And how has long-term hedging evolved over the last 5 to 10 years?
Well, although PPAs do provide a baseline revenue and a first level of stability to renewable energy projects, there's still risks that arise when signing a PPA or after the conclusion of a PPA. And one of the most important risks that can be quantified up to 70% of the risk, as I understand, is price risk. And so this is the risk of being exposed to fluctuating market prices. For example, for the volume that PPA doesn't, or the PPA doesn't cover, but I'm sure Jorge and Jay could elaborate on that further. But in any case, there is this price risk that is created, and that has to be hedged. You know, there's only so much risk that players can have on their own books, and they want to be able to offload that and manage that. So that's where the exchange trading comes in, because of course we've always been the home of price risk management, and what we found that is in Spain, which was really the first market where you know, the government stopped offering subsidies for renewable energy projects. What this created was a need for long-term hedging, because of course PPAs are long-term agreements. So this means that the price risk is created for a much longer tenor than we've seen previously for conventional power. And it was actually quite funny. I think this goes back to May 2018, in fact, when we had a trader party in Madrid. So the good old days of trader parties. And I literally just said to the, you know, to everyone who was gathered there, like, hey, did you know that we have 6 years available for trading and clearing already? And it was almost like a light bulb moment. And a few days later, we had our first long-term hedge in Spain, where two counterparties registered a deal OTC. So that means that they negotiated on the price and the volume before, and then they placed the deal on exchange for the full 6 calendar years. And since then, we've had 33 of those deals with almost 16 terawatt hours in total traded, varying tenors. It can be 6 years, it can be four, it can start from front months or quarters and then go into the cals. They've usually been at a flat price, but they can also be registered at variable prices. So we've really seen great uptake in Spain, and that's kind of where it all started.
So everything was going great, and then bam, COVID lands. Jay, I'd like to bring you in here. As a leading energy company, Uniper must be used to fluctuation and disruption of markets. In your opinion, what impact has COVID had on PPAs and long-term hedging?
Oh, you know, that's a good question, because it's really hard to pull those things out. But, you know, I think it's definitely had a significant impact on the PPA market. You know, when COVID first arrived in March, this was shortly after eWorld, you know, which is a big energy conference here in Europe, and there was a lot of buzz, and people were excited about, you know, the prospects for 2020. And then, yeah, the first lockdowns came in March, and there was still a lot of this energy and a lot of people talking, and it wasn't even clear that there was a slowdown. But then, you know, in a matter of 3 or 4 weeks, it was clear, okay, there's a lot of talk, but actually the ability to put a PPA together, to get lawyers in place, to get counterparties talking, to get people to focus on things other than, you know, the world around them, it was just not happening. So things really did slow down, I think, on the PPA negotiation front through most of Q2. I think that's turned around a little bit over the summer period. You know, I think we've seen a lot of slowdowns, and Jorge can probably comment a lot better on this, but slowdowns on supply lines and actual project builds. I mean, there's been delays there, and that's going to be harder to overcome, especially now heading into this winter period and seemingly, you know, more lockdowns and impact from the COVID virus. But I do really think commercially and in the PPA space, things have started to pick back up again. I've noticed, at least on our side, conversations have begun a lot more in earnest over the last 6 to 8 weeks. We see bankable projects coming through that we can have a look at and participate and offer offtake and hedging solutions to these independent power producers. And, you know, I think the prospects are quite good for 2021. It's, you know, I'd say on the hedging side of the equation, it really has been business as usual. I mean, maybe we haven't the industry hasn't had the same number of onboarded volumes as we might have liked to see, but there's still existing positions to trade around, to hedge, to de-risk, and that's still a very active thing for us. And actually, we've seen a lot of volatility in the commodity markets through this year, partly as a result of COVID, and that's certainly made it so that traders have to remain sharp and active in the market. The markets don't go to sleep.
Jay, thanks for that. Jorge, let's bring you back in here. I mean, would you share Jay's view here? Would you see things in the same light?
Yeah, completely. I agree with Jay because, as we said, the COVID outbreak is damaging some existing PPAs and also delaying new PPA negotiations. This is a two-way impact that COVID is having. The first one is supply chain disruptions are expected to significantly hamper under construction projects with already negotiated PPAs, leading to increased project cost and diminished developer margins. And on the other hand, in terms of new PPA negotiations, as you know, PPAs are typically negotiated and at discounts to the wholesale electricity price, and therefore drops in the wholesale prices impact the PPA pricing structure and consequently the viability of projects in the short term. PPA negotiations have particularly slowed down due to the drop in electricity prices and with the extent of the ongoing COVID-19 restrictions unknown, it is difficult to estimate a correct pricing structure that would offer good terms for developers in the current environment. So situation is complex, not just in general for the new PPA negotiations, but also for the existing PPAs. But yeah, completely agree with Jay. Yeah.
And Viviana, coming back to you, I mean, from the exchange perspective, what about the long-term hedging from the exchange perspective since COVID? I mean, has it been a major impact? How's it looked for us at EEX, for example?
Right. Well, for us, of course, the shock of COVID created a lot of volatility, a lot of trading. Therefore, as traders adjusted their positions, there was obviously quite a sharp drop in power prices, which then had the impact on PPA prices and negotiations. But for us, we look at markers of where we can also provide stability. And I think we were able to do that quite well during that turbulent period. And also importantly, things like our margins didn't change too much. So the initial margin, for example, that's kind of a factor of volatility in some way, because it is based on a long look back period. It doesn't necessarily change quickly when there's short term market shocks. So that's, I think, also a good thing for traders to be aware of. Of course, then, you know, another interesting thing we looked at was the difference between, you know, daily price movements in the short term CALs versus the long term CALs. So this is more towards variation margin, which is another important factor to take into account when placing long term hedges. And so usually the CAL plus six, for example, price doesn't move very much on a day-to-day basis, which means that there's not a very significant amount of variation margin that's charged. Whereas there was some volatility, of course, during COVID, but then after that, the long-term prices stayed at a baseline. So I think that shows as well that the market expects recovery and stability going forward.
Thanks for that, Viviana. And actually, you've answered my next question, which was to do with the short-term impact. Let's look a little bit more long-term now. I know it seems quite far away, but there is going to come a time where we are in a position where we are post-COVID. What do you guys think are the long-term impacts for PPAs and long-term hedging?
I can see a number of possible outcomes to that question. I mean, I think for me, it's fairly clear that post-COVID, there's going to be a lot of action by governments in order to re-stimulate the economy, rebuild the economy. And one of those actions that's been talked about a lot, both, you know, in Europe and North America, but as well in Asia, is around so-called new green deals or green new deals, you know, where there's a lot of money that's provided from the public sector into environmental initiatives. And that certainly would be supportive of bringing more renewable generation online, and so a lot more solar and wind. But then there's a question as to how that would look from the government. And I wonder, is the government going to go back to previous sort of subsidy regimes like we saw for the first 15 years or so of renewable development in Europe, or are they going to continue down the path they've been with diminishing subsidies, but perhaps other types of incentivization? And if that's the case, I think that'll be very, very supportive for the PPA market. Because as Jorge said at the top, what PPAs have come in to replace is that stability of revenues that the governments were originally willing to supply. And that's been pushed onto the market and to market agents such as Uniper and big merchant utilities. And I mean, we're very much interested in being active in that space. But if government subsidies come in and take that over, then the need for PPAs can somewhat diminish. But to me, it should likely go one of those two routes. It seems quite clear that, I saw a political cartoon that I actually found really, it's one of these memes that was online when COVID first hit, and showed a wave that said COVID, and then second wave COVID was larger, and then there was this enormous wave behind it, around climate change. And that really, I do think that the public is awake and aware to that, and certainly there's a lot more government policy that's supportive of that, certainly at the EU level. So it seems to me that's a fairly safe bet, but how it plays itself out and manifests itself, that's a more difficult question to answer, and it might actually be country by country. So in places like Spain, where we've seen PPAs already be successful and robust, then there's every reason to expect that could continue. But in countries like Germany, we already see some swing back towards more government-supported schemes, and that might undermine the prospects of PPAs. So it's also good too to think of it at a country or market by market level.
Jay, I totally agree with you. That's definitely an interesting dynamic that we're starting to see play out in this post-COVID green recovery. And obviously, as the exchange, we're really supportive of market-based solutions. As you said, it's already been proven in Spain, and we want to be at the center of that by offering long-term expiries, for example. So we're working on extending our expiries up to 10 years in Spain, Germany and Italy to facilitate more of this long-term hedging and hopefully, offer this kind of way to facilitate more PPAs. So we shall see. We really hope that we can provide a strong enough argument that market-based solutions are enough and the way to go, and the way for the market to develop in a more sustainable way, instead of putting the burden on taxpayers to finance, the huge renewable growth that will be needed to meet all of the climate targets.
Completely agree, Viviana. One of the things that we can see right now is that we are in the middle of a storm and we don't have too much information on which to substantiate reliable forecasts. We have to be cautious and avoid an excessive pessimism and catastrophism. But we will see how this evolves. One of the things that I completely agree with Jay is that a lot of government supporting schemes might come in, and this might make PPAs to diminish in the midterm. But still, these Green New Deals that Jay was talking about will bring more renewable generation to the market. So this is the good news. So in general, more renewables will be coming in the market, and we will see how we develop them. But still, these are the good news. Regarding where do we see the PPAs, as Viviana said, from my perspective, I think this is going through a standardization, the creation of new products. EEX is doing a great job here, trying to create new products, extend longer tenors, and this is helping renewable companies as we are. It's helping us to contract our revenues, not only with the PPA market, but also with the long-term hedging. We will be able to hedge longer tenors, I hope very soon, Viviana. And obviously, this standardization will help everyone to make trades easily, to reduce the counterparty risk that we haven't been talking about. With this COVID-19 situation, the counterparty risk when you sign a PPA is one of the main drivers. And right now, when you sign a long-term deal, for example, in EEX, as all the trades are cleared at the clearinghouse, and obviously the counterparty risk is reduced. So this is a very good tool that renewable IPPs can use in the future. We are starting using them, and probably will use more in the future.
That's perfect, Jorge. Thank you. Top marks, definitely counterparty credit risk is a huge topic, and will definitely be more significant post-COVID times as well. And it only gives more reason for people to consider trading on exchange for short-term PPAs as well, perhaps, you know, because as I understand, you have 5-year PPAs, perhaps for end of life. Maybe this is something more relevant in Germany. And of course, long term, for when we have more expiries available.
Effectively, you know, what I heard Viviana and Jorge saying is, you know, there's been a move towards more standardization, or a wish for more standardization within the industry, and you know, we've certainly seen that through use of master agreement language, EFIT language, et cetera, in PPAs, as well as, you know, a more sophisticated range of instruments being offered by the exchanges, longer dated tenors and even things like peak products, et cetera. I do think it's noteworthy as well, and this is something I think Uniper sees ourselves playing a strong role in, is when not every independent power producer has the same risk profile and the same wish to hand over components of their risk profile. Some are willing or wishing to hang on to some of their volumes for upside. You know, some of them are happy enough to hang on to volume risk and just wish to hedge baseload or fixed volumes, things like this. So, you know, I personally think if the market tries to converge too much towards very, very standardized products, it's going to potentially be a disservice to some of the independent power producers. So I think, you know, having a set of building blocks that are there and known, and then allowing the parties on either side of the PPA to assemble, you know, the right set of risk transfers between them, is, to me, that's hopefully the solution down the road, because I think it'll retain the most flexibility that the marketplace can offer and provide.
Yeah, I completely agree, Jay. And I think in that situation that you mentioned here, the role of power traders across Europe is going to be vital, because we might have more flexibility with more standardized products in the exchanges like EEX. But on the other hand, different IPPs with, as you say, with completely different risk profiles, we might need those traders in the market to remove part of the risk that we are bearing. So I think it's a perfect picture that you showed here about a mix between these standardized products, but also allowing for this OTC negotiation. Yeah.
And that's the way it's always been, right? And I think it's just super interesting to see how these traditional ways of hedging and trading are now being applied to renewables and to PPAs.
No, it's a good point Viviana makes there. I mean, PPAs, it's really a buzzy topic in the industry, but at the end of the day, it is trading. It's just, you know, it's market-based solutions. It's trading. It tends to be longer tenors, and there's some more complicated aspects to it, but it's no different than in most respects than the industry that's been around for 20 years or more. So it's I like the point that you make.
Thanks so much for that, Guy. Some really interesting points and perspectives, I think, were brought up there. And it's nice to see that we're leaving it on a much more optimistic tone than perhaps some people would expect. If you have any questions relating to today's episode, by all means, get in touch. The email addresses of myself and our panel will be included in the episode notes. Until next time, stay safe. And as always, thanks for listening.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.